Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commission members. I'm going to speak briefly. First, I'd like to respond to Mr. White's comment earlier about emotions. Sorry, Diane Burritos. The comment was made earlier that things might be better or easier was the implication without emotions. After 25 years of environmental regulation, I can say not taking into account emotions, which includes compassion and commitment, has been one of the major problems of the human race and what we've done to the world. So I want to speak to you about one specific part of number three, and that is you've heard the term wildlife habitat mentioned here several times by very eloquent speakers. One of the habitat functions of mountaintops is that they provide significant wildlife corridors for large roaming predators, such as mountain lions, wolves, and lynx. These corridors are sometimes generational, that they've occurred for hundreds of years with a particular species. It's not something that when it's altered in a way that species can't use it, that they go somewhere else or they just take a reroute around it. That animals don't think that way. They haven't evolved that way. So my concern with expediting environmental assessment on mountaintops is that things like wildlife corridors are not even addressed in the review process. Also, there are other species, such as bird species and botanical alpine communities in these areas that are irreplaceable. They can only occur at certain elevations with certain temperatures and certain aspects. And those areas, those special areas, it sounds like not necessarily reviewed in an expedited review process, at least in my experience as an environmental reviewer. When the governor's office gives you a mandate, whether it's written or through legislation, that something is to be expedited, things like that, real in-depth ecological assessment is sometimes overlooked. So you talked about you have a mandate from the legislature to go through with this allowing expedited review of certain areas. Well, I would say to you that you also have a mandate from your original comprehensive land use plan that the citizens wanted you to promulgate. And it seems to me, reading number three, where the second sentence, which says, would not compromise the principal values and goals identified in the CLUP, I think that allows you, that gives you a lot of good discretionary ability to really look at these requests very, very carefully in terms of environmental assessment. I'm just going to end this by saying I'm from Cape Cod, and I'm sure you're all aware about the Cape Cod Wind Project in Nantucket Sound, which is now in its eighth year of review. Some of those years were created by political pressure for people with multimillion-dollar houses not wanting to see these windmills offshore or to pass by them in their sailboats. But a lot of the other years of review has provided significant ecological information that has made the regulators be able to comfortably say yes to this project on a state and federal level. And I would again ask you to be mindful of the fact that not every mountaintop is appropriate for wind power. And people have spoken to the fact that they should be in more developed areas. That makes sense, both environmentally and economically, and would ask you to really look at these projects very, very, very strongly. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you.
The chair has asked me to name off. Alan, before you testify, the chair has asked if I would name off the The chair has asked me to name off the next five individuals who have signed up to testify so that you can come up to the front row. That would include Wendy Glenn, Kyla Hersey Wilson, Rebecca Sender, Jesse Dowling, and Richard Fecto. So Wendy, Kyla, Rebecca, Jesse, and Richard, if you want to come up to the front row, that'd be great. Thank you. Thank you, Alan.
Men and women of the Land Use Regulation Commission, I appreciate the...
State your name.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
My name is Alan Michka. I'm from Lexington Township. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak today with you, and I hope that you will listen with interest to my concerns and my comments. Specifically, Commissioner Laverty, I want you to know that I fully empathize with what you're faced with here. And that's really the angle from which I hope to speak to you today, is simply that I know that you've been given a charge. It might be unreasonable, but you've been given a charge that you must follow. In my opinion, the commission and the people of Maine have been let down by the legislature on this issue, and I think it creates a lot of problems for everybody involved, especially the commission. But that's the legislature's fault. They'll have to answer to that someday, hopefully. I will read my prepared comments first. They're short, and I think they'll be painless for most everyone. And then I will address the issues that you have up here. I don't envy the task, as I said before, as you contemplate the manner in which you proceed on this important issue. I note that in instances such as these, the commission must work with what has been put before them by the legislature, no matter how unsavory, no matter how misguided, and no matter what or who motivated the legislation at hand. The commission has historically been charged with the protection of some of Maine's most valuable and precious resources, with the protection of Maine's quality of place, and with the assurance that Mainers today and tomorrow would be able to enjoy the unique qualities of rural life, something that is becoming increasingly difficult to find even in our own state. Your job will be difficult because the legislature has given you orders to act contrary to the best of the interest of the jurisdiction and ultimately contrary to the best interest of the state. The governor's task force, in allegiance to the wind industry and with the passive consent of the legislature, has confiscated for its interest the future of one-third of LURC's jurisdiction, its people, and all other living things within it. Ideally, I would ask the commission to simply refuse to add any additional land in its jurisdiction to the expedited permitting area in loyalty to its purpose as laid out in the comprehensive land use plan, the same plan approved by the legislature but now being dismantled by that body. Absent that action, it should be the commission's goal to minimize the damage inflicted by the legislature and the governor's task force to preserve as much of its remaining jurisdiction as possible. As I understand it, the commission has been given the power to add lands to the expedited permitting area, but not the requirement to do it. Addition of lands to the expedited permitting area would be contrary to the law's charge that the comprehensive land use plan's principal values and goals not be compromised. Interestingly, the legislature's mistake in passing this law is made more apparent with the realization that the expedited permitting area can only grow. It appears no provisions were ever made to remove lands from this area. So, if and when the commission chooses to expand the impact area of the industrialization of rural Maine, it appears there is no turning back. With regard to the expedited permitting area, I ask the commission to not surrender any authority that has been left to it to protect the rural values of Maine and its quality of place. Do not give away any more land to those who care nothing about the long-term health of our state, who care only about a bottom line, and who view rural Maine as their personal ATM machine. The law gives you the authority to say no, and I ask that you use it. I want to emphasize the point again that it is my understanding, I'm not an attorney, but it is my understanding that you're not required to add any additional land to the expedited jurisdiction. And again, I ask you not to do that. With regard to what you have up here, the first question, what did the Energy Act, which enacted recommendations of the governor's task force on wind power development, do, and what did it not do? What it did not do is it did not develop any type of long-term comprehensive energy plan for Maine. What it did do was it provided for a comprehensive wind power developer wealth enhancement program. Geographic extension is fairly self-explanatory and seems fairly obvious, but if you read LD 2283, it emphasizes that as technology improves, the areas which wind power turbines can be placed will grow because they won't need to be in the highest wind spots. They can be put into lower wind potential spots. So by geographic extension, it essentially rules out nothing. Any part of the LURC jurisdiction will someday be gained. State goals, I think this is where a lot of the problem is. The state made very simple goals for itself in that it wanted nothing more than a certain amount of power production. It seemed to turn its back on all other factors. But as I understand it, arriving at those goals, there were certain criteria that had to be met within the law. Tangible benefits, a consideration still of Maine's concern over natural character, even though we understand under the visual impact that's been severely restricted now. But in meeting the state goals, it doesn't take away the necessity to consider all those things that the legislature said you had to do to get to those goals. So what I would like to say is in regard to meeting these goals, and of course we know that number two and number three here are largely in conflict with each other in some way. So again, the legislature let you down there as well. But what I would like to leave you with, as you contemplate what you have to do here with regard to adding territories or lands to the expedited permitting area, I think this needs to be done with within a context of other information that is out here. Because you do have that authority to look at some of these things. From LD 2283, it says specifically, nothing in this section is meant to diminish the importance of addressing as appropriate site-specific impacts on natural values, including but not limited to wildlife, wildlife habitats, and other ecological values. Not limited to those things. So there are other things here that you can look at in the furtherance of that. Now, I would like to just give you a few quotes. These are all very recent quotes, things that have happened in the last few weeks mostly that I think are very, very salient. Number one, this is the oldest of the quotes. It's about a year old. This comes from Peter Mills, and this speaks to meeting state goals and tangible benefits. He wrote to the Maine Center of Economic Policy regarding wind turbines and wind power. It is difficult to define a substantial long-term benefit that will accrue specifically to Maine's people. Our power bills will not be noticeably cheaper, real estate taxes from these projects will not be broadly beneficial, and the number of new jobs will be small. That tells me very few tangible benefits for Mainers. Now, I realize that in LD 2283, the legislature pretty much redefined the word tangible, and pretty much blue sky is a tangible benefit. Second, keep in mind when you're deciding what lands to add or if to add, and I hope that you don't, a recent comment by Hannah Pingree, our State House Majority Leader. She said, and this is from about 3 or 4 days ago, two towns in my district, North Haven and Vinyl Haven, and their local community-owned co-op have just put up three large turbines. Through that process, we have learned a lot about wind noise standards, and the reality is that the current noise rules under state DEP law neither sufficiently protect neighbors, and at times they don't make sense for the project in terms of producing energy either. That is from one of our representatives, one who voted for this law. So there's obviously problems. And also, with regard to meeting goals, one of the goals this legislature enunciated was the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. I think it's important to know that last week a report came out, and I'd be happy to make a copy of the report available to the commission, that Spain, who is a leader in the world in terms of wind energy, they produce fully 25%, a quarter of their electricity from wind. Yet between the years of 1990 and 2005, their greenhouse gas emissions went up by 50%. I don't know how wind will help with that goal, if that's the way this works. Without a comprehensive energy policy in place, these wind turbines all over our mountains are folly. Lastly, the last thing I will leave with you is, I hope many of you have already known of this or heard of this. November 12th, in the Asheville, North Carolina, Citizens Times, a report that senators in that state had voted 45-1 to ban commercial wind energy from its ridgelines. 45-1, the senators said, we don't want wind turbines on our mountaintops. A quote from one of the senators who voted against it, or who voted in favor, he was one of the 45. We came to the conclusion in the Senate that it wasn't worth compromising the mountains of western North Carolina, which we draw so much of our economy and our identity from. What do they know that we don't know? Why do they value their mountains more than we do? I know that's not your problem. It's the legislature's problem. They gave it to you. I can say a lot of things about that, but but you do have the discretion to say no. We can meet these goals, or whether we do or not, or whether we should or not, is an entirely different public hearing. But the bottom line is, you do have the discretion of adding additional lands to the expedited permitting area, and you don't have to do it.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Glenn. I am a real estate agent of 23 years. I live full-time in Carabasset Valley and part-time in on Chain of Ponds on the lower end of Natanas Pond. I come here because I live the closest. Most of our camp owners are from out of state, and one of the reasons they come to Chain of Ponds is to get away from it all. From the cities and from all that goes with that. They appreciate the pristine nature of Chain of Ponds as it is. There are a couple points that I think I can address perhaps more than others with regard to the tangible benefits. It says that there should be significant tangible benefits, environmental or economic improvements, with particular attention to assurance of such benefits to the host community. We would be the host community as far as any expansion on this CISC project goes. In our correspondence with TransCanada, the benefit that they're extending to us is a new public boat landing. They have extended benefits to Eustis, which is over 15 miles away, in the form of an extra $45,000 for the recent expansion. But literally, they have not offered us a single tangible benefit other than offering to perhaps increase the boat traffic on the lakes by improving the boat landing, which actually right now is quite dangerous. As far as economic benefits, again, I'm not sure what the economic benefits to our region are. I can't come up with them. What I do know is that people that have invested in property there have had a detrimental impact to their real estate values. A number of properties have turned over because of the Kibbe Ridge project. I know that everybody who has invested in the area is extremely concerned about the negative environmental and economic impact to our area and to the property value, not just our own personal property, but the...
I just want to let you know, this is great testimony, but it's probably more applicable to part two, where we're actually talking about the specific project.
Okay. Well, then I'll talk about the evaluation criteria.
Well, that I think that would be more helpful to us.
Okay. I'm trying to... So... I guess I'm sorry I didn't realize that. But in any case, I mean, the basic is that environmental benefits, economic benefits to the local community, we can't come up with any. So please bear that in mind. As far as the evaluation criteria, the significance of potentially affected scenic resources, the Land Use Regulation Commission classifies their wildland lake assessments for chain of ponds as following: fisheries outstanding, wildlife outstanding, scenic outstanding, shore character significant, culturally significant, and physically outstanding. It says that that these characteristics should stay intact. And I believe that if we surround the ponds with windmills and allow the expansion down Sisk, that this will definitely negatively impact the outstanding characteristics of the ponds as they were deemed by you. There are guidelines that are to be followed that we have followed for years on the lakes about maintaining these characteristics. And it's not just about the private lands. It's about the public reserve lands that surround, that are range from the north end of Natanis Pond, which is a publicly owned campground and used by many, many people who come to the wilderness for that experience. The public reserve land stretches all the way down to Lower Pond. All of these ponds.
You've got great testimony. It's just I don't think this is.
As far as expanding the, if they.
Yeah, in a more general nature, and then.
What
you're talking about
testimony.
Is very specifics about this project, which we'll have another public hearing to cover all of.
I mean,
yeah, what you're doing is
okay. So they're sacrificing your goals. The principal goals are being sacrificed. These are all the things that you guys have set in place. These are all the things that you're looking for. These are all the characteristics and things that we value about our land. This is in direct conflict with any sort of expansion on the wind projects. They already are sprawling all over the area, and the negative impact is incredible. So I guess I apologize for my misguidance on this. And I did feel it necessary to have somebody here from our area today to speak on behalf of this, what we feel is overtaking our area.
Are you going to be
in
able
the public's
to come to
area?
The second hearing?
I don't know. When is it?
What's the March? March. If you can't, will you submit that testimony in writing?
I will be there.
Okay.
I don't know what else I can say today. I guess maybe I should just read them. But what you guys set up, the reasons we bought property there, the reasons people go to these public reserve lands, which are public lands, the expansion of these wind projects into those areas is in direct conflict with what people go there expecting. I think the total of the ponds is like 700 acres, and the public reserve land is 11,200 acres. Or wait, 1,120. What's that?
The fact that they're great ponds will have an effect on the deliberation, so.
I hope so.
Put that in your testimony, too.
Okay. Jeez, I didn't know it was me quite that embarrassing.
Don't be embarrassed.
It's good. It's just comes another day. We're confusing people. But it's
I'm
all
trying
right.
to be. All right. Thank you.
Wendy, the commission can accept testimony, written testimony from you to speak directly to the three criteria that they're soliciting input. So your written testimony, if you want to follow up after today's hearing in writing to the commission, we will share that with all the members of the commission. So we would greatly appreciate if you could provide written testimony that
and
speaks
that
directly. I think the record is open for weeks and weeks. Open until the end of March.
I might have a breather by then.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Kyla?